Welcome to Rob and Emily's story. Rob has been very courageous to share with us his beautiful daughter Emily and his journey through grief with Firstly, in a hope that other brave parents can connect to his story and seek the support they need. My name is Georgia Howard and I'm the Clinical Services Director here at Firstly. We are a trauma-informed service and we offer therapy free of charge to suddenly brave parents. If you or a loved one are struggling with the sudden death of a child and are seeking support, reach out on our website and send us in a referral. We are here to help. This story contains discussion of the death of a child, details of which you may find upsetting. If you find this content upsetting and need support, reach out to Firstly and we'll be there for you.
Emily's just perfect. Everything about her was perfect. She was like a dream kid, reached all her milestones. She was a little pudgy, squeezable, huggy kid. But when she was three then, we started to notice she was kind of her eye. She had a bump in her eye and her eye was starting to kind of drop a little bit. So that's when we brought her to the doctor a few times and we were told that she was fine and nobody was perfect. You know, we're not all perfect and we kind of were grand with that, and Jill was taking comfort out of it, what the doctor was saying, but just kept getting worse and worse. So eventually we brought her to Talla Hospital and they done the scan and they found that she had a tumour behind her eye, between her brain and her eye. And everything started to fall apart then. I had a really bad feeling when we got to Talla, because when we were in Talla Hospital, in the space of an hour, we'd seen about five doctors. And there was loads of kind of hushed voices outside the room. And they said, look, we're going to admit you and we'll get you a scan in the morning, an MRI scan. So we were like, okay, at least we're getting somewhere. And then the following day, the day of the scan, we were in the children's ward, obviously, but we were just kind of waiting around for the whole day for them to come down to us and kind of give us the results. It's got to about 6 o'clock and we're like, Jesus, they haven't come to us. And I was kind of saying, is that a good thing or a bad thing that they haven't come? And then again, about five or six people came into the room and stomach just went then. Knew straight away that this is going to be bad. And the doctor at the time drew a circle on a page and she said, that's the top of Emily's head looking down, and drew another circle kind of inside and said, that's a tumour. And that's all they could tell us at the time, because they didn't specialise in oncology or childhood cancer. So we were transferred to Crumlin and it was just blow after blow after blow then for days. Went with Dr. Capra, Michael Capra, in Crumlin Hospital, and he was Emily's consultant, absolute legend. But he kind of had his suspicions as to what it was. He said, look, we'll need to biopsy Emily's eye. And he said, I'm expecting that there's going to be a lot more tumours. And sure enough, there was eight more tumours. She was three. And kind of oblivious. She was never sick. And even at this stage, she wasn't sick. It was just the visual thing that we noticed with her. And she was just, every day she had a different Disney princess dress on in hospital. Like, she was just, perfect. Such a good natured, just gorgeous person. She's like Mary Poppins, practically perfect in every way.
Oh, God.
So, when they came to tell us about the eight tumours. We had actually had a scan, and on the scan in Temple Street, because the machine was broken and crumbling, we got transferred to Temple Street, and you could see on the screen all these lights flashing up, and I thought it looked really good. I thought it looked cool, because I said, I think all those lights are obviously not, it looked kind of pretty, so I was like, that couldn't be anything bad. But there was loads of them, and I was thinking all the black bits there, that must be where the cancer is. It was the other way around. All the lights were the cancer. And it was everywhere at this stage. So back to Crumlin. And following morning, started chemotherapy straight away. Rapid Kojak, it was called. And she was very, very sick very quickly then. So I think from that point, I think we had about 5 weeks in hospital, solid. And then we got home and we'd be in every couple of days, or if she spiked a temperature, you'd have to go straight in. And we spent a lot of time in hospital. Most of the time you'd be in hospital, yeah. And it just kind of ruptured everything. Like, obviously, we, Luke at home, myself and Jill would be like ships in the night. Yeah, so one of us would have Luke, or one of us would be in hospital. And then work obviously comes into it then as well, and you have to do a bit of work and just try to keep everything going at the same time. So, yeah, my hair was a different colour now at the start of it all. It was kind of darker. Yeah. So then you get intervals in the treatment, and you'd find that you'd get news, and our first news was really positive. And I remember the results after the first round of chemo came back, and the cancer had shrunk everywhere. It had disappeared in some places. Now Emily was very sick at the time, but it was real. It was real, like, oh yes, and a real excitement. But it would only last for 20 minutes, because you'd realise that you're still in a really horrible situation with a 50% chance of survival. Like, I remember that day, that particular day, we got the really positive news. They said, look, we're going to start a different course of chemo tomorrow called TVD. And it was like, right, so we're going to make her sicker again because we've had such a good result. You know, it doesn't make sense, but at the same time, it had to be done, yeah. So it was three, and then, so that treatment went on for about a year and a half. And then she starts getting better. The hair starts growing back and like, she's improving. And then they come in with high dose chemo and a bone marrow transplant. And it's it just knocks her way back. And she was very sick after that. She got liver disease from the chemotherapy. And she was just a dream child in that scenario as well, because she never complained or anything. It was just, she just kind of got on with it the whole time. It's really hard to explain how she was, because she was like the most, she was like an adult almost in the way she was compassionate and gentle. And she was looking after us a lot of the time. And even in certain cases with our treatment and all, she'd be protecting us in some of it. And it was just so obvious, like, for someone so small, that, like, it was amazing that she could do that. And she could see the pain that all, like, her family and her extended family were going through because of our illness. But, like, kind of, yeah, she was always the one to lift us up, like, to keep us going. Yeah. We had gotten more or less the all clear around 2018. Emily had her Freddy removed, her hip benign, and we got married, myself and Jill got married, and it was like a really good time. Emily was well, there wasn't a bother on her, started school, everything was going really well. And then we were going to Spain in 2019, July 2019, and we noticed just a little bump on her below her ear. And straight away, like, I was like, that is not good. But we've gone to the hospital a few times. They kind of said, look, it could be a swollen gland. Like, let's not always just jump straight to cancer, but it's a bit difficult to go there. So they said, look, go on your holidays and come back, and we'll talk about it when you come back. Enjoy your holidays. You know, Emily had the time of her life. Luke had the time of his life. And it was a good holiday. I kind of struggled a little bit on the holiday because that's all I could see. But it was great that I could see Emily so happy and Luke so happy, and myself and Jill were just happy with that, you know. And then when we came back, scan, the cancer had returned, and we were going to have to go down the chemo route, Hickman line back in. We just made it clear, and Dr. Capper agreed with us at the time as well, that we wouldn't give her as harsh a treatment or as stern a treatment, because we just couldn't put her through what she had gone through. So the treatment would be a little bit kinder to try and manage it, but we were made clear that it wasn't going to be, it's not curable as such. It's the job now is to manage it. amazingly, cancer disappeared after a while. I think it was around COVID time, and it was great. There was certain elements of COVID that were good, that because we were all together and that was cool. But then it came back again and came back with a vengeance. When was that? That was kind of September 21. You know, that was one of the things, like that all the effort that Emily had put in, and then obviously the work, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat. Like I'd love to still be going to Grumbling and all that, but the fact that we put all this in and we were told that, look, the words that were told was that Emily's not going to be with us for a very long time. That was the night of the toy show. And it was just, it was horrific, horrific. And it's like we had two Emilys as well, because we had Emily before she was sick and then Emily after. And her personality was just amazing. Everything about her, and she had such great relationships. Like, she had a brilliant relationship with Luke, different to, say, a relationship with her mom and a relationship with me and our nanny. And she was just, we all looked up to her. In Night of the Toy Show 2020, sorry, not 21. So 2020, and then she passed in the 11th of May 2021. But the deterioration was very difficult. Very difficult for her as well. Like, at one stage, around St. Patrick's Day, her leg stopped working, her left leg, because the tumour was pressing on her spine. And you could see it in her. She was asking, she was like, why won't my legs work? And it was really so tough. And you're always trying, like, you'd always love to be able to fix everything for her, but just this was unfixable. And when you've been told things like she was going to pass and she's not going to be with us for a long time, like, you kind of get, I don't know if anger is the right word, but you're just like, how can they do this? How can they say that to me? After all we've done and after all she's been through, that it's not going to work out for us. When I remember back through Emily's treatment and all, there were so many really brilliant times as well. Like, not related to the treatment, obviously, but there were so many times when she was well. I'd always be keen to stress on those times, because she'd done a lot in the short time she did have. She got to 7.5. The half was very important. I don't know, I just remember the day after our funeral, like, everything was so busy and so, like, we wanted Emily to be at home when she passed. So we had nurses from the Irish Cancer Society coming. We had the Kildare pain management team coming. And we'd all, like, it was just really busy. There was always medicines. There was always stuff to do. And the day after Emily's funeral, everything stopped. Nobody called. Even, like, obviously our families had been there the whole time. But just that the very next day, it was like, just dead silence. It was horrible, horrible. And it just got worse and worse. And it kind of, you know, your purpose in life before that was to help Emily, and our whole lives revolved around Emily and Luke and making sure that, you know, they were looked after and all that. And then obviously, she passed. It was just kind of left, like, it was almost like, what do we do now? From even throughout Emily's treatment during the years, it was Sunday night, Jill would, we'd make our plan, hospital visits, when I'd be able to work around collecting them, and, what days I'd be doing in the hospital, what days Jill would be doing in the hospital, and it was just left a massive, massive hole there that, like, It's kind of difficult to explain. It's just everything just stopped. And, like, it was like, right, you're looking around. Where's everybody gone? What happened? And it was very difficult as well that obviously myself and Jill are grieving, and it's very difficult for either one of us to lean on either one because it's nearly impossible because there's nothing there to lean on because, yeah, at the same time, and you're trying your best then for Luke, and obviously he has loads of questions about death, and I remember it was one of the days it was really cold and Luke was like, is Emily wearing a coat in the box? Because he was worried that she was cold. And you try to explain, but things like that just rip you apart. Like, I remember one day it was thunder and lightning and we were at home and Jill ran around, jumped off the chair. She was going around to the graveyard because Emily would be afraid around there on her own. You know, like things like that. At the time I was like, I remember getting a bit annoyed almost that, like, why is she doing that? But that's obviously her, the way she was feeling. Yeah. But I was just annoyed because that was just, it kind of hurt at the time. Like, I suppose that'd be one thing I'd have a bit of a regret for. I kind of tried to bury my head a little bit. Started playing golf badly. And yeah, there was just loads of thing. I went back to work after 4 weeks. Now, I had been off months previous, obviously, because we were coming up to the end. But I went back to work and just let it build up. And got to Christmas 21. And about 2-3 days before Christmas, I just broke down. That was it. I wasn't able to hide it anymore. Like, I wasn't letting it out. And I always remember Emily's doctor, Dr. Kepper, again, always used to say to us, it's important to let your heart do the talking because it'll talk at some stage. Whereas I was kind of not getting upset at home or trying not to. Like, Jill was very good and been able to deal with her emotions. Or not deal with her emotions, but maybe like she was able to be upset, yeah, and express her emotions. But I was after a few days before Christmas. Eventually, Jill made contact with a counsellor in Kildare, and I went, but I didn't really, not that I wasn't ready to go. I think she was a bit more taken back by the stuff I was telling her, and I just felt like, oh God, like this is really horrific stuff. I didn't feel like it was worth going to. And then coincidentally, about 2 weeks later, I'd been off work, kind of struggling to get out of bed. And Luke actually came to me one day and said he was afraid that we were going to lose me, like we lost Emily. And that was helped me to get out of bed at least, and kind of try. It was a bit of a shock, but beside Emily, where Emily's buried, there was another little baby buried, and Jill and the lady came fairly close and they were yapping. She was just explaining that I was going, yeah, and she mentioned forcefully to us, so and the fact that it was like what you specialize in. It made it so much easier. It made it so much less daunting for me to come in because I was like, please know what this is about. So after Emily passed and I was saying there, everything got real quiet, and like the hospital can't, like they have so much, they can't support parents of bereaved children then. They're not equipped to do. You're kind of left then, you're left with it. I remember the first time I went home, I was like, jeez, I need to sleep for fucking days. Definitely. Because when I first started coming, I was coming every 2 weeks. And I was like, no, I need to come here every week. But I was just, you know, at first you're like, oh, I'm not going in there because I'll only end up crying. Or, you know, like, which is the whole point. And then when I done it, you'd feel great. You'd feel great. And yeah, I even notice if I don't come, say, like, if I hadn't been home for 2 or 3 weeks, I'd be like, oh, I need to get back in there. But it was someone to listen to me. Because, like I was saying, like I couldn't lean on Jill because we're both really struggling. And yeah, it's just difficult to, I found it difficult to lump my stuff on top of Jill's stuff or vice versa. So it was really helpful to be able to come in and just dump it all in here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think the work thing for me is I need to be distracted. But then there's obviously days when I go in and I'm like, Jesus Christ, I can't deal with this today. But I mean, yeah, it's what else do you do? And that's what, like, even throughout Emily's treatment, I was very lucky, the job I worked for, they were very supportive. And but like in the cold light of day, like you have to pay, even the car park in the hospital, like, you have to pay for everything. It's expensive.
To have a child.
To have a sick child, yeah. And that's it, basically, in a nutshell. Breed. I'd probably go back to what Michael Capper said. Let your heart do the talking. Do you know, because I just didn't. I kept busy. And, you know, if somebody said to me, oh, how are you, Rob? Oh, yeah, grand, yeah. Yeah. You know, but I really wasn't. And I knew that myself, but I thought I was managing it. I thought I was kind of, oh, I'm playing a stormer here, like you're doing really well. But, no. Like, I always remember afterwards when you'd see someone that you probably wouldn't see a huge amount of time, and walking away from that interaction and thinking, I hope they don't think that I'm fine, or that I've just moved on, or that I don't care. I hope, because, you know, in those 20 or 30 seconds, you're, yeah, how are you doing? Like, and it's, everything seems fine, or, you know, it's, you're talking football, or, and I'd probably encourage people to not be afraid to talk about the child, like, or to say, bring Emily up, in my case, and, because I find every time I see someone like that, I'm constantly trying to talk about it, or if I meet someone new that I haven't met before, I'm like, you know. Yeah, I've two kids, you know. I kind of, for what are, say, dads in particular, that might not be kind of inclined to go and talk to someone or talk to a counsellor. Like, just do it.
If you are a loved one, are struggling with the sudden death of a child and are seeking support, reach out on our website and send us in a referral. We are here to help.